This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
We're a couple days in already with the Broncos in training camp. Benjamin Albright will join us later on from Broncos Country tonight. The Denver Nuggets have some interesting updates on the Peyton Watson saga. Are the Nuggets preparing to make peace with life without their young 3-and-D player? We'll get into that. The UNC Bears, very fun podcast today with Ed Lamb, Football 52. Is it time? Is this the season that the Bears finally turn it around? After pretty much not being successful their entire run in Division I football. A very sad history for the Bears. Are we going to be singing a different tune? Fun Friday. The whole show starts right now. It seems like we've had something new on Peyton Watson and what the Nuggets might ultimately do here. This is the latest. I got this from DNVR Nuggets. The Milwaukee Bucks are now a player. They would consider absorbing Zeke Nagy as part of a Peyton Watson sign and trade, per Mike A. Scotto. That is a tough debate right there. If the Nuggets are truly feeling like the end is near for Peyton Watson, that at the very least they could get 1 year out of him if he picks up his option, you're kind of pushing all your chips in, saying, okay, let's suffer the consequences, know that he's probably going to go somewhere else, but we think we can win a title running it back and with Peyton Watson, then that would be a tough sell, even though it would mean moving off of Zeke Nagy's contract. But at the same time, we've talked about this at great length for several years now. This Nagy contract is one of the worst. I mean, it's not a ton of money compared to what a lot of these guys are making, but he's in the $7 million and he doesn't play. Would it be a good move for Denver to cut bait finally on Zeke Nagy if it meant moving on from Peyton Watson? I got to just say it. After a week of this, here it is on Friday. We've had this as a topic almost every day. I just don't know if Peyton Watson is worth all this trouble at this stage. He wants to be paid more than Christian Brown. There is a part of me that believes that Christian Brown dealt with that ankle injury and he was never the same last season. And this next year, assuming he can stay healthy, he will live up to that contract. And, you know, you made it, in retrospect, you made the right decision giving him the money first. I never thought there would be a situation where they were going to end up walking out of this with both guys paid. I always kind of considered Peyton Watson one of those dudes that, you know, he's going to be a good player, solid player coming up. I didn't expect him to have that December that he had last year, which I think complicated so many things. It's weird because why would you say having a player step up and play exceptional for over a month is a bad thing? Sometimes that's the example. He outplayed what he's worth currently and played himself into a deeper conversation about how much he really is worth. And facts are, he wants more money than Christian Brown. He wants to make 23 plus at minimum. And I don't... That is the tough question. Do you take a chance? Again, on Watson. Give him the bag. And then you've got a lot of risk on your roster. A lot of high paid guys that are really, you know, all of the guys we're talking about, save for Joker, are all susceptible to injuries, even though Joker, yeah, he got his last year. He was out for a month. But everybody, including young guys like Peyton Watson and Christian Brown, have all faced injuries that have kept them out for a significant amount of time. Does Denver really go into this? And here's where I'm thinking. This year might not be the year. This might be a salary dump year, a move on from Zeke Najee finally, unfortunately sign and trade Peyton Watson, which they could do. I believe if you have a even though they're in the second apron, if you have a team that agrees to first take Zeke Najee's contract and then agrees to, okay, you guys sign Peyton Watson and we will trade for that, it does make life, I believe that would put them out of the second apron in time because you can't go back. You can't sign and trade right now for a player. You can sign and trade for draft capital, which the Nuggets have kind of backed off of their asks on that because I don't think they're getting any bites. But you can't sign and trade for players being in the second apron. But if you can agree, if you and Milwaukee can agree first to have them take Zeke Najee, and then you do the sign and trade, I think that all works out. And worst case scenario, / best case, you're out of the second apron, but you did have to move on from Peyton Watson. I was never of this mindset that Watson was the end-all be-all, that this was the name that you really... In fact, I thought it was a little depressing when I kept reading reports that retaining Peyton Watson is priority number one. The fact is, we just don't have enough information. And Denver's just not at a point of luxury anymore to take a chance, take a flyer on a guy that hasn't really proved it year after year. Christian Brown has a stronger body of work, has a stronger resume than Watson. And I'm more, after going back and forth on this in my mind, I'm more apt to say, we made the right choice. We chose Christian Brown. We're going to ride with that. We're going to build around this team. We're going to hope that that ankle is better. And Brown is a much different player. He didn't look right last year. If you watch, especially those playoff games, there was a moment, I showed you, Michael, there was a moment where Christian Brown had the ball deep in the paint, could have gone up with it. Instead, he dribbles out of the paint, and he looked timid. That's not the Christian Brown that we saw his rookie season. That's not the guy the season before that who was leading the league in fast break points. To lead the league in fast break points, Mike, not only do you have to be quick and good at finishing, you got to be tough as nails. You're going to the rack, and you have a defensive guy sprinting at you as quickly as possible, and you are going to absorb contact. You are going to get hit. There's a good chance you're going to fall to the ground. That was not the Christian Brown we saw after the ankle injury last year. So he's too young to say that he's Aaron Gordon, that, oh, well, now he has the injury. He's 25 years old. He turned 25 years old in April. So these guys should be rebounding after those kind of injuries. So I'm starting to make peace with the idea that you cut your losses. If you can get a team to take Zeke Najee, you move on from Watson. And you take the risk of him becoming a household name and a star, as opposed to you signed him and he is a forgettable player. There's still the DeMar DeRozan stuff out there, too, and we haven't heard much of that in the last 2 days. But this is a fairly new development for Denver, and I think you almost need to go with it. If the Bucks would really consider absorbing Zeke Najee's contract, then you clear him out, and then you wish Peyton Watson, you wish him well. I'm just not ready to say he's worth all this trouble. Now, if he's cool with $14 million a year, I still agree with my take on Tuesday that if I'm Watson, I'm not thrilled. that you shouted off a rooftop that you would match $30 million for match any team's offer of up to $30 million to make sure that he doesn't go there, but then I turn around and offer you half as much with a $14 million contract. I would still say I'm not feeling sorry for Watson, but I would still say that if I'm Watson in his camp, I'm not thrilled with this. That doesn't change how I feel about Peyton Watson. He's got a big old fat question mark over his spot on this team. It was fascinating reading Troy Rankster. Troy Rank has been sharpening the teeth this year. You can tell through his writing, very upset that the Broncos are having Jonathan Cooper at training camp. In this story yesterday, his headline reads, Nikola Jokic Nuggets turning into Giannis Milwaukee this season, this offseason. Loyalty to starters led to contracts that have left the Nuggets unable to make big moves. Will Jokic continue to trust organization's visit? He's maintaining that Joker is absolutely being methodical with his decision to not re-sign with Denver this offseason. I'll admit, when I first heard word get out that he is not going to be in a rush to sign the contract, I was a little concerned by that. But then you have a Serbian reporter talk to him when he's playing, you know, after the game, and Joker still says, I am going to finish my career as a Denver Nugget. I'm going to be with them for my career. I tend to take him at his word. Does that make me naive? Troy Rank thinks so. He writes, if you think the player with the highest basketball IQ was not sending a message by not signing a contract extension this summer, it's time to have your head examined. I agree with that, but then I heard Joker say it again a month ago, less than a month ago, saying that I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to finish my career as a Nugget. Now, what that could mean is I'm retiring after this upcoming season, which would be a major shock, excuse me. I think it would be a major shock at this stage because he's still fairly young and he's still playing at the highest of levels. But I think I do think the money thing is a factor. He wants to make as much money as he possibly can because he has other plans after he retires. He will be, guarantee Mike, he'll be involved in the horse business of some kind. And the more money you have for that, the better. And I can't confirm that, but reading Mike Singer's book, the whole reason he decided to really buckle down and take things seriously was because his mom's like, you go be a professional basketball player, you can make all this money, and someday you could just own your own horse arena, horse rinks, or whatever they're called. You could just own that stuff. Now, who knows if Joker would have gotten serious about everything without that being said, but at least in that moment, it was kind of like a light turned on for Joker. Like, I am pretty good at this. If I committed even just 1% more, I could be the best player to ever do it. And then I could make a ton of money, and I could use a lot of that money to grow my horse empire. That's all conjecture. That's all opinionated stuff. I don't have that for fact, but just based on the knowledge that I've been presented over the last few years, that's why I don't believe he's interested in taking a pay cut. It's also why I don't believe he's signing the contract right now, because there's $80 million or whatever more on the table for him. But if they're just really going to run this back, I do think it's got to hit his brain. Like, wait, didn't I say after the loss to the Timberwolves that we weren't good enough? This roster right now, if this happens and you sign and trade, you get Zeke Nagy gone, but you sign and trade Peyton Watson, he's gone. This roster, on paper, is worse than it was by far last year. With Tim Hardaway Jr. not on the roster, and Big Val not on the roster, and Bruce Brown not on the roster, this is a worse team on paper. Now, again, Marvin Bagley, he could turn out to be a player. Spencer Jones, they're taking a risk there. And they're going to give him his $12 million for 2 years. He could turn out to be good. Tyus Jones is your backup point guard right now. KJ Simpson, former Buff, is your third string point guard. You're going in assuming Watson's gone, you're going into this very important season, because every season with Joker now is even more important because the days are numbered. How did it get to this? How were you able to botch this so badly? Well, it just worked out that way. They trade Michael Porter Jr. to release to make some room on the roster for bench guys. Well, one of the guys they signed already was like, I'm going to go overseas. I'm going to go play for Greece. That was a story this time last year with Jonas. It was, is he actually going to play for Denver, or is he going to go? They're at a standstill here. Is this going to get messy? So the writing was already on the wall there. Denver probably should have known that. Now in hindsight, they should have probably known that Jonas Valanciunas was not really committed to playing basketball in the States much longer. They were holding out hope that they could probably do the two-year deal. But then he played, and it was fine. I thought he was a good backup center. Maybe one of the, if not the best backup centers the Nuggets have ever had while Joker's been on this roster. I mean, the use of Nurkic would have been good, but once he was not a starter anymore, the guy wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. But Denver, maybe knowing this year that, yeah, he's not going to stay. It's going to be a fight to keep him. Let's just cut bait. Let's move on. Okay, Tim Hardaway Jr. Couldn't find a way to keep him, or was it already a foregone conclusion he wanted to go somewhere else? He's in Miami now. It's just, that's how it worked out. Should they have signed Tim Hardaway Jr. to a two-year deal? They got Jonas. So Jonas was already on a two-year contract when they got him, so that one, they already had 2 years. But the bottom line is, you have a lot of guys that you need to see just step up and play at a higher level. And that's Cameron Johnson, that's Christian Brown, that's Spencer Jones now, and new addition Marvin Bagley. But I can't tell you with confidence on the 31st day of July, this final day of July 2025, that the Nuggets are better on paper than they were last year. I think they're worse. Doesn't mean they're not in a window. When you have Joker, you're still in a window. Troy Rank thinks that the window is completely shut and locked. I have a hard time with that. But there's also a part of my brain that thinks this year is all about cutting costs, getting out of the second apron, rebooting for next season. And that's depressing. They'll still be a playoff team, just not a contender. You know, you look at the money that will free up next year. So Cameron Johnson will be a free agent next year. So there's $23 million that you'd have to play with at the end of this upcoming season. Julian Strother, they obviously are picking up his team option, but he'll be a free agent next year. Daron Holmes will have, he had two team options on him. He has another team option there. The point is, a lot of money frees up after the season, and then you can start to make realistic decisions. Do you re-sign Cameron Johnson? Do you take that money and go elsewhere with it? Try to find a decent free agent that could come in and take his place. The more we go along with this with the Nuggets, Michael, it seems like this year is all about freeing up cap space. Salary dump. That's what the Peyton Watson move would be. Why can't they? You're not going to be able to offload Zeke Nagy's contract without something. Someone's not going to take that contract on. $7.46 million if they don't get something else in return. It would be bad business for any team to just do that. And the Nuggets don't really have a lot of other capital to sweeten up a deal like that where a team would take him. They're going to have to make the terrible decision. Well, I don't say it's a terrible decision on their part. It's the one that they're forced to make. They're probably going to have to sign and trade Peyton Watson. And they're going to end up, their number one priority this year was Watson. And that's going to go away. Were they seriously waiting for LeBron James? I mean, it's not like they had a ton of money to do anything, even if they weren't waiting. LeBron's playing for nothing. They could have gotten him. Actually, that would have made sense. But I still maintain that it would have been a bad move for Denver. I don't think it would have been a championship move for Denver. But I don't know that right now there are any moves to make that make you a championship, that make you any more of a championship contender. Now, as we get close to the season, who knows? Cam Johnson had a weird start to the season. And Brown got his injury. Joker got his injury. Gordon was up and down all year. You never really got to see what this roster was going to be. And that there's also, there is somewhat of a built-in excuse there. You never really got to see what this is going to be. I think the Nuggets are just in a really tough spot right now where they're going to have to cross their fingers and hope that a lot of these dudes just work out. 25 minutes after the hour. We'll take a short break here. A lot to talk about. I want to dive in on the UNC Bears football team today. Caught up with Ed Lamb on Football 52. Man, Mike, it's been a long time if you're a Bears fan. The Bears they've just been irrelevant. They have not been good since they joined Division I. Their best two seasons, they were one game over 500. Is this the year that everything turns around completely for the University of Northern Colorado with those lights now less than a month away? Keep it here on the whole show. We'll be right back.
Your local news during your commute. Good morning, NOCO. Weekdays at 6 on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 at 1310 KFK.
In Colorado, local matters. It matters who you trust, who knows your name, and who's rooted right here in our state. I'm Sean Ostoff, president of Bank of Colorado, and we're staying grounded in the same values we've built on for generations. At Bank of Colorado, we stay true to what matters most: local decisions, real relationships, and communities we call home. If you're ready for a bank built for Colorado and committed to it, choose Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Hey, this is Warren Jackson, former CSU wide receiver, and you're listening to the whole show on KFK.
Time to play the game. Time to play the game.
I was going to save this for top story of the day, but I think this has some legs here. CBS Sports announced that lead NFL color commentator Tony Romo has been placed on indefinite leave, Mike, after he was pulled over and ultimately arrested for a DUI. J.J. Watt will be Romo's replacement, per Adam Schefter. Good move, bad move, rocking a hard place kind of deal.
Rocking a hard place.
Because you can't say that you're condoning it and you're laughing at all. Like, there are a lot of people watching the videos. They've made a bunch of mashups on these videos of him doing his sobriety checklist. And Tony Romo sure seems like the nicest guy in the world, even in a bad situation like that. GoPoke says Romo is innocent. It is one of the more... how do I put this without sounding like an idiot and a jerk? It is one of the more polite and positive DUI sobriety tests I've ever seen. It's really hard to see Tony Romo deal with that. Not deal with that. He put himself in that situation, but after watching all this and seeing that it wasn't met with a ton of really negative outcry, I thought maybe CBS would ignore this, maybe not ignore this, maybe that's not the right way to put it, but have him issue some kind of a statement or apologize publicly. Maybe. But Romo's good, man. I know there's a lot of people that are kind of mixed on Tony Romo. I think he's really good. And I think over the years, I think he's gotten better. I think he's entertaining. He provides something different. But, I mean, at the end of the day, he did something like this and got a DUI, and it's a public thing, very public. The video is all over the world. Everyone has watched it 4 million times, I'm sure. Everyone has made edits to it. There was a moment there where the police officer asks him if he's ever experienced any kind of head trauma or concussions of any sort. She clearly didn't know he was Tony Romo, and good for him. He didn't He wasn't using his celebrity to try to get out of anything. There was a moment where he kind of just stared off into space like he was thinking of every concussion that he had. And he's like, yeah, I had a few. And people have had a lot of fun with that. It is crazy because most of the time you see someone, you hear someone get a DUI, and it's usually, if they do get video footage, there it is, then it's not always like, it's a pretty scary situation. It's terrifying. You can really put yourself in that. I'm telling you, it was like the most delightful sobriety test I've ever seen a celebrity have to do that's videoed for the world to see. I know that sounds terrible. I'm not excusing it. I'm just saying that it is what it is. People have been entertained by it, and it's been met with a lot of positive reaction. It's crazy.
I think the report of the open bottle that was in his car probably
was there a report that it was
top.
Open? There was a report that there was an open bottle?
Yeah, I thought on ESPN.
Okay, there was an open bottle in there. If you're the head of CBS in this decision-making plot, if I'm the head of CBS in this decision-making plot, am I doing this? Are you doing this? Are you moving on from Romo? Or are we issuing a statement? I'll tell you right now, I'm issuing a statement. I'm keeping Tony Romo on the staff.
I would, because this is an instance where it doesn't matter whether he was nice or not nice to the cop.
But he was delightful.
Like, you want to say, hey, this is unacceptable, so you kind of have to.
Yeah,
but
I
for me, it's more like a 4-game suspension.
Yeah, I don't like when people say it's unacceptable, but then they still are doing the exact same thing that they were doing, so it's clearly not unacceptable.
It's unacceptable, except when I do it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Some kind of suspension. And again, what we know at this point is a leave of absence. Is that right, Michael? It's a leave of absence? And J.J. Watt will take over for now? Yeah, placed on leave by CBS.
Yeah, until further notice.
Yeah, because they're going to let this go through. He received 3 citations from the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office following a July 23rd traffic stop. After he was seen passing cars in a Gore area, which separates interstate traffic from cars entering from an on-ramp, he performed poorly on field sobriety tests and was taken into custody, booked, and released. The sheriff's office said Romo had an open container of alcohol, there you go, Mike, in his black Jeep. Court records show Romo was later cited for refusing to take the test for intoxication after arrest. He has now been placed on leave by CBS. That does not mean he's been fired.
I wasn't aware you could be cited for that. Like,
for refusing?
You can decline it.
Yeah, you can. You can refuse a sobriety test.
So I don't know what that citation is.
You can refuse a breathalyzer. Can you refuse a sobriety test? Like getting out of the car and doing all the crap they make you do?
Yeah, you can. You can say no to all of them. The cop would arrest you if they are sure that you have been drinking. And then they would take you to the station, and they would give you a blood test, or a more comprehensive breathalyzer.
Where did depends they take on what him? They by the way, they there. Took him to like it looked like some underground lair that they took him to do these tests. It was really creepy. It was really weird. It was strange watching the whole thing. According to body camera footage released earlier this week, Romo told deputies that he had been coming from a golf course and was on his way to visit grandma and grandpa when he stopped. A deputy told Romo he suspected him of being impaired because he had red glassy eyes and an odor of an intoxicating alcohol beverage. A court appearance is scheduled for September 21st.
What happens if there's no blood in his alcohol? Like, you do know the cop lied there. Like, if he had blood in his alcohol. If he had like
blood.
Not been drunk, you know the cop was lying.
Well, did you watch the video?
I have not.
You should watch the video. I don't know that I could obviously say he was hammered or drunk. I don't know. I will say he's like our age, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's a year or so older than me.
Are your grandparents still around?
No.
Mine are not either.
I mean, there are some people that live into their 90s.
It's true.
90s.
Yeah, I mean, but my grandma died when she was over 100. She was over 100. She was my grandpa died when he was 90. And I was just thinking, I'm like, they must be in their, his grandma and grandpa must both be well beyond the 100s, right?
I mean, it depends. People are having kids later these days. Earlier generations had them in their early 20s, late 20s.
That's like a top thing that people are Googling, by the way. Are Tony Romo's grandparents really alive? That's like something people want to... Not that that matters that much. People lie about where they're going all the time. But that's what he told police. He was visiting his grandparents. And my first thought was like, he's got to be older than me. He's got to be well into his 40s.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't give them any information whatsoever.
He's 46. So, yeah, I mean, again, grandparents can... They could have kids really, really early. And then their kids have kids really, really early. And that's how it kind of works. It's not really that big of a deal. It's just that's a funny... Now, that's a big Google thing now, is are Tony Romo's grandparents really alive? Didn't think that would be on the Google search in 2026.
Yeah, I feel bad for Tony Romo. If he was driving drunk, he should be punished by the law, clearly. And if you're CBS, because of politics, you kind of have to do this. You can't play favorites. Oh, one guy was drunk driving, and he was rude to the cops, so he's fired. One guy was drunk driving. You know, it's still a crime to drive drunk.
Tanner's saying he was referring to getting his own kids from his parents' house, but he was calling them grandma and grandpa. Okay. Yeah. So he was like, I call to my kid, I'm like, hey, it's Grammy and Papa. Like, I call them that now.
Yeah.
They're not my Grammy and Papa. So that could be one of those things.
It's like me with my dad. I call him Grandpa sometimes because my brother has some
kids
children.
Kids, they call him that. So then he just becomes that to everyone now.
Yeah. It's like everything revolves around the nieces and
nephews. That's fine. That's probably what it was then. Not that it matters that much of where he was going or what he was doing. Obviously, what they care about is if he was actually drunk or not. So, okay, Michael, can you prove now that he had alcohol? Can we do that now? Can you prove it?
I mean, they've probably taken some kind of test. If it's a blood test, I don't know how long that takes. If it's a breathalyzer, depending on whether it's been calibrated or not, because I think those things do need to be calibrated from time to time. Like, breathalyzer, you'd know right away, but some of those breathalyzers just aren't accurate.
But he didn't take a breathalyzer test.
Yeah, and I wonder if they gave him a blood test. If there was no testing, I would say he has the edge on getting the case dismissed.
He did not initially take a blood or breath test during his July 23rd, 2026 OWI arrest in Milwaukee, but law enforcement subsequently filed a search warrant to obtain a mandatory blood sample. So there you go. Romo had refused both preliminary and post-arrest chemical tests at the scene.
Which he should.
So they secured a search warrant for a chemical blood draw after his refusal, though complete analytical results have not been publicly released. When will that be released? Curious.
I don't know. I would like to find out. Because I am a big fan of his. My dad and I watch football together a lot, and we both like him a lot. He's creative and funny. I think he's become less accurate now. All the people that he's worked with, you know, played against in the league are gone, but he's still very smart as a quarterback.
Yeah, I would have put him on some kind of short suspension. Maybe that's what they're doing, putting him on leave.
Yeah, it sounds maybe worse than it actually is.
Well, it's clearly not going to be off the charts, whatever they get, right? Because he didn't seem off the charts in the video.
Yeah, I haven't seen the video, but was his speech slurred? Look,
not bad.
An officer is
not
going
bad.
To pull me over.
They couldn't.
And if I'm really
yeah.
tired, they're going to think I'm drunk because
sure.
my speech always slurs and my eyes are going to be watery.
They're going to pull you over on the scoot? When you're going too fast on the scoot?
Yeah,
going
breaking way too fast in the bike lane.
Yeah. From what I saw, they had a hard time hearing each other because they're on the freeway or whatever, and there's traffic, and it's hard. So they were both, what? What did you say? When he was out, I mean, he was smiling a lot. He smiles a lot anyway, though, I think.
I mean
when
he did
played,
a commercial
a
for
lot.
Shoes, and even when he wasn't smiling, he was smiling.
He's always smiling. His face kind of looks like he's just in smile mode. So, interesting story there. 41 minutes after the hour. I'll weigh on this one, Go Pokes. I'll bite on this one. Michigan's Kyle Whittingham. It's weird to say Michigan's Kyle Whittingham. It's weird to say that. He was talking about the Ohio State rivalry. What did he have to say about it, and is he right or wrong? We'll hash that out here coming up. First, let's get the latest on the local sports flash.
Hi, this is Spencer Smith with DNVR Rockies, and you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
So, new Michigan coach Kyle Whittingham was asked about the rivalry between Michigan and Ohio State, one of the big rivalries in all of sports. He said, "I just think that a rivalry can be intense and emotional without the hatred factor. I don't think there's any place for that personally." That apparently has Michigan fans a little upset because they love to hate Ohio State and Ohio State loves to hate Michigan.
I would have said, yes, it is absolutely okay to hate Ohio State. Because all the other coaches that have been hired between the two, one their biggest thing that gets everyone cheering is, oh, these guys are awful.
That's
my
always
goal
like
is to
the
beat
cliff
them.
Notes they give you, too, when you're a new coach taking over. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't need notes for this one. But, like, I remember when Adazio was hired by CSU, one of the big things he kept hammering down was, hey, we're going to beat that team up north. You know, that was his big focus, was we're going to find a way to just take care of that. We're going to run our rivalries here. I mean, I always say, I think there can be nasty hatred. Sure, sports hate is fun, but there can be a line where it just gets too bad. I don't want death threats and crap like that.
And
but
don't go after anyone's family.
I think he's okay in this take. I don't have a problem. I mean, he said, I think a rivalry can be intense and emotional without the hatred factor. And he's probably not talking about the sports hatred factor. I think the sports hatred factor is part of the intensity and emotion that goes into it.
He's coming from Utah, where your big rivalry is BYU and Utah State. Those are all huge rivalries.
I love you. You're fine, but we don't like you. Ah, good game. You know, that kind of thing. But I've seen like CSU and Wyoming. Like they hand the boot off every year, and it's always cordial. And the IEDs are fine to each other. Everyone's fine. And there's not like a real. It's not a real hatred unless you actually have a real personal beef. And they might get one.
Michigan, Ohio State might get one. Michigan, Ohio State, they fought on the field.
Yes.
After the game last year, the players. Like, that's real sports hate. But you're not going to get real sports hate from a lot of regular rivalries. Cal and Stanford, you will. Not Washington, Washington State. I'm not going to see
like,
a lot of fights there.
Like, if Ryan Day does something to piss off Kyle Whittingham, then you got real beef there. And if there's fights going on and that kind of thing, like the CSU-CU rivalry, you cannot deny that heated up in a dangerous way after what we talked about yesterday, after the Henry Blackburn-Travis Hunter hit. And then you had all the other stuff happen. When Norvell's talking about taking your sunglasses off and my mama raised me to not do that when I'm talking to people, and Coach Prime took offense to that, and then at the end of the game, they're getting ready to shake hands, and you got Shedeur Sanders overheard telling his dad don't put hands on him. That is real hate. That is real dislike that person.
It's minor hate compared to Michigan, Ohio State, but I have a problem with stupidity.
You're missing my point. I'm saying that was real hate. That's not a fabricated, it's a rivalry, so you have to hate someone. This is real. Coach Prime does not like Jay Norvell. Jay Norvell does not like Coach Prime. That's my point. This isn't I just hate, like you do your thing where I don't like Chiefs because I hate them and stuff like that. That's just fabricated because you're a Broncos fan and you've been taught to really hate the Chiefs. You don't know anybody really on that roster that you flat out hate because they personally screwed with you. What I'm talking about is if it really happens and something negative really happens between someone on your team and someone on their team.
Well, I mean, they have done things that personally bother me, and that's beat the Broncos. And
see, that's not real. That's the little fan thing in you. That's not like a real, like you flat out just hate that person because of who they are as a person. that's when it's not fabricated anymore, and it is more emotional than anything else. These rivalries, yes, I want there to be intensity. I want there to be a legitimate sports hate amongst fans. But I'm telling you, it takes something like the Norvell Coach Prime thing, the Henry Blackburn, Travis Hunter thing, which they all made good with that. That's what creates sometimes dangerous hate. I mean, CU fans, you didn't really like CSU. You considered him a little brother to you. But after that stuff, and then you get Braden Fowler, Nicolosi going on, talking about how they're all about clicks and all that stuff, and then that created even more. That became, like, real. I remember even talking to CSU people, like fans, media guys, were like, I'm just glad this is over, because this was kind of getting to the point where it was a little too intense. 11:52 the time. Let's take a quick break. We'll wrap up hour number one. We got top stories of the day coming up at noon. Benjamin Albright from Broncos Country Tonight will join us. What has he seen thus far inside training camp 2026? Keep it here on The Whole Show. We'll be right back.
Two teams, no parades.
No!
What's next for the Nuggets and the Avalanche this offseason? Keep it on Northern Colorado's Voice. 103.1 and 1310 KFKA for the latest.
Hey, Ram fans, this is Ali Farokmanesh, your head men's basketball coach at Colorado State University. And you're listening to The Whole Show on 103.1 and 1310 KFKA.
Fast moving first hour. Second hour is going to be just as fast. Benjamin Albright will join us. We'll get his thoughts on Bo Nix and Jonathan Cooper, Davis Webb, Jahdae Barron, all that and more. If you have Broncos questions, bring them, because we can sure bring those up to the host of Broncos Country Tonight. That coming up in the second hour. Top stories of the day coming up next.
This KFK podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.